You're using your hand without understanding what you are doing. That is dangerous. One reason for the collar is to open my mind to the gift. That's what you said. If I'm using the gift, which is what you want me to do, and if it is what I need, then I don't see how that is dangerous. What you need and what's right are not necessarily the same. Just because you want something, that does not make it right. She nodded to the sword. Take it back. I cannot accept it now. You must keep it. I told you I don't want it. Then throw it in the fire. I cannot take it. It's tainted. Richard snatched it out of her hands. I'm not throwing it in the fire. He put his head through the baldric and straightened the scabbard at his hip. I think you're too superstitious, sister. It's just a sword. It is not tainted. She was wrong. It was the magic that was tainted, and he had not offered that to her. Even if he wanted to be rid of its magic, all magic, he could not. It was part of him. Kaelin had seen that, and she had rid herself of it. Of him. She turned from him and mounted Jessup. Her voice was cold and distant. We must be on our way. Richard settled into his saddle and followed after. He hoped the little Gar would have a chance at life after the meal it had needed. He said a silent goodbye to it as he rode into the night behind Sister Verna. Though he had meant what he said about giving her the sword, he felt strangely relieved to have it back. It belonged with him, and somehow made him whole. Zed had given it to him. It was what had changed him. But it was also all he had to remind him of his friend and home. Chapter 25. The horse was exhausted, but still ran with wild abandon. Addie held a tight grip on Zed's waist as he leaned over the horse's withers, clutching her mane. Muscles bunched and flexed rhythmically beneath him. Trees in the dense forest flashed by in an endless blur. The horse leapt over rocks and logs without pause. The Skryn was only a heartbeat behind. Being taller than the horse, it struck branches as it ran. Zed could hear the limbs snap and splinter. He had tried felling trees across the way right behind them, but it didn't slow the bone beast. He had tried tricks and spells and wizardry of every sort. None had worked. But he refused to admit defeat. Admitting defeat established a mental state of resignation that would make it certain.
I fear the keeper has us this time, Addie called at his back.
Not yet he doesn't. How did he find us? The bones of the Skryn have been in your house hiding you for years. If they have been hiding you, then how did he find us?
She had no answer. They were running the path where the boundary had been, headed toward the Midlands. Zed was thankful the boundary walls were no longer there, or they could have inadvertently run into the underworld by now. Boundary or not, this couldn't go on for much longer. And then the Skryn would have them. Boundary or not, the underworld would have them. The Keeper would have them.
Think,
he ordered himself. Zed was using magic to lend strength and stamina to the horse, but even so, heart, lungs, and sinew could not endure long past their natural limits. He was nearly as weary as the frightened animal. This couldn't go on much longer. He had to stop trying to slow the Skryn and put his mind to solving the problem. But that could be a dangerous shift in tactics. It could be that although what he was doing wasn't stopping the Skryn, it was keeping it from them. He thought he saw a flash of green light to the left, a shade of green he had seen from only one place, the boundary, from the underworld.
Impossible, he thought. The horse's hooves thundered on. Addie, do you have anything with you that the Skryn would recognize?
Like what?
I don't know anything. It has to have found us by something, something to connect us to the underworld.
I have nothing. It must have found us by the bones at my house.
But the bones have been what have been hiding you.
There was no mistaking the flash of green light this time. It was to the right. Another came to the left.
Zed, I think the Skryn be bringing up the underworld to force us into it.
Bones. Can it do that?
Her voice wasn't as loud this time.
Yes.
Bags,
he muttered into the cold wind at his face. Eerie green light flickered between the trees. It was closer. If he didn't think of something, they were going to die.
Think.
Suddenly, the green light seemed to ignite into a solid wall to each side. It made a thump he could feel deep in his chest when it arrived, whole in this world. The horse galloped down the path between them.
The way between the walls was narrowing.
Bones. Skryn bones. Eddie, give me the necklace around your neck.
The luminous green walls of the boundary pressed in to each side. They were out of time. They were out of options. Addie pulled off her necklace and put her arm around him again, holding out the bone necklace. Her hand was slick with blood. Zed yanked his own necklace over his head and snatched hers in the same hand.
If this doesn't work, I'm sorry, Addie. I just want you to know I've enjoyed sharing time with you.
What are you going to do?
Hold tight.
The green walls of the boundary closed together ahead of them. Zed held the horse firmly and gave her a silent command. She dug in her hooves and spun around to a halt just before the trail ended in a wall of the underworld. Zed flung the two necklaces made with skryn bones into the green light between a wide gap in the trees. The skryn was upon them. Without pause, it followed the necklaces as they sailed into the boundary into the green light. There was a flash and a booming clap like a lightning strike as the skryn went through. The green light and the skryn flickered and were gone. The dark forest was silent but for ragged breathing. Addie laid her head wearily against his back.
You be right, old man. Your life be one act of desperation after another.
Zed patted her knee before sliding off the sweaty horse. The poor animal was so exhausted it was at the brink of death. Zed held its head between his hands and gave it a dose of strength and his sincere thanks. He laid the side of his face against her nose as he closed his eyes and gave reassuring strokes to her cheeks for a moment before going to check on Addie. Blood still oozed from the wound on her arm. The size of the horse made Addie appear smaller than she really was. Her slumped shoulders and hanging head didn't help diminish the illusion. She didn't acknowledge any pain as Zed inspected the wound.
"I be a fool," she said. The whole time I thought I'd be hiding under the keeper's nose. He be hiding under mine. He knew where I'd be the whole time. All these years.
We can take solace in the fact that it earned him no profit. He has wasted his investment. Now hold still. I must tend to this wound.
There be no time for that. We must get back to my house. I must get my bones.
I said be still.
We must hurry.
Zed scowled up at her.
We will go back when I'm finished, but the horse is exhausted. She must be walked. I'll walk and let you ride, if you give me no further trouble. Now be still, or we will be here the whole night quibbling.
By the time they reached Addie's house, dawn was breaking, offering a cold, weak light. It was a sad sight. The skryn had torn the place to splinters. Addie disregarded the leaning, holed walls as she rushed inside, stepping over debris, picking up bones, holding them in the crook of her other arm as she worked her way toward the corner where they had last seen the round, carved bone. Zed was inspecting the ground outside when he heard her calling to him.
Come help me find the round bone, wizard.
He stepped over a fallen beam.
I don't expect you will find it.
She pushed a board aside.
It be here somewhere.
She stopped, looking back over her shoulder.
What do you mean? You don't expect we will find it?
Someone has been here.
She looked around at the ruin.
You be sure?
Zed waved his arm vaguely toward where he had been studying the ground.
I saw a footprint over there. It isn't ours.
She let the bones in her arm drop to the floor.
Who?
He laid his hand on a beam that hung from the ceiling, its end resting on the floor.
I don't know, but someone has been here. It looks to be a woman's boot, but it isn't yours. I suspect she will have taken the round bone.
Addie pawed through the rubble in the corner, searching. At last, she stopped.
You be right, old man. The bone be gone.
She turned, seeming to inspect the very air with her white eyes.
Banelings!
She hissed.
You'll be wrong about the keeper wasting his effort.
I fear you're right.
Zed brushed his hand clean on the side of his leg.
We had better get away from here, far away.
Addie leaned toward him, her voice low but firm.
Zed, we must have that bone. It be important for the Vale.
She has covered her trail with magic. I don't have any idea where she went. I only saw one footprint. We must be away from here. The Keeper might expect us to return. I'll cover our trail also, so no one will know where we're going.
You'll be so sure about that. The Keeper seems to know where we be, and sends his minions for us at will.
He tracked us by the necklaces we wore. He will be blind to us for the time being, but we must get away from here. He may have eyes watching, the same eyes that took the bone.
Her head sunk lower as she closed her eyes.
Forgive me, Zed, for endangering you so, for being a fool.
Nonsense. No one knows everything. You can't expect to walk through life without stepping in the muck now and again. The important thing is to maintain your footing when you do, and not fall on your face and make it worse.
But that bone be important.
It's gone. We can do nothing about it now. At least we foiled the Keeper. He didn't get us. But we must be away from here.
Addie bent to pick up the bone she had dropped.
I will hurry.
We can't take anything, Addie, he said quietly.
She straightened.
I must take my bones. Some of them be important. Some have powerful magic.
Zed took up her thin hand.
Addie, the Keeper knew where we were by one of the bones. He's been watching you. We can't know if he would recognize any of these two. We must leave them, but we can't risk having someone else taking them. They must be destroyed.
Her mouth worked for a moment before she found words.
I will not leave them. They be important. They were extremely difficult to obtain. It took me years to find some of them. The Keeper could not have marked them. He could not know the trouble I went to.
Zed patted her hand. Addie, he wouldn't have placed one he wanted you to have to mark you right in your path. He would have made you struggle for it, so you would value it and keep it close.
She yanked her hand back.
Then he could have marked anything.
She pointed.
How do you know this horse was not given by a baneling?
Zed gave her a level look.
Because it was not the one offered, I took another.
Tears welled up in her eyes.
Please, Zed, she whispered. They be mine. They be how I was going to reach my Pell.
I will help you get your message to your Pell. I have given you my word, but this is not the way to do it. It hasn't worked yet. I'll help you find a new way.
She limped a step closer to him.
How?
He regarded her stricken face with sympathy.
I have a way to bring spirits through the veil for a brief time to speak with them. Even if I can't bring Pell through, I might be able to get a message to him. But Addie, you must listen to me. We can't do it now. We must wait until the veil is closed.
Her trembling fingers touched his arm.
How? How can such a thing be done?
It can be done. That is all you must know.
Tell me.
Her fingers tightened on his arm.
I must know you speak the truth. I must know it can be done.
He weighed the decision a long moment. He had used the wizard's rock his father had given him to call the spirits of his father and mother to himself, but they had told him explicitly not to call them again until this was finished, or they would risk tearing the veil apart. Using the rock in such a fashion was dangerous, even in the best of times, and he had been cautioned not to do it except in the gravest circumstances. Opening a path to the spirits was always a great risk. You never knew what you could be letting through unintended. Enough dark things were getting through without his helping them. Even though Addie was a sorceress, this use of the wizard's rock was not for her to know. It was a secret, like many others, that wizards must keep. His heart felt heavy with that responsibility.
You will have to trust my word that it can be done. I've given my word that I'll help you, and when it is safe, I'll try.
Her fingers still dug urgently into his arm.
How can such a thing be? Are you sure? How could you know such a thing?
He straightened his shoulders.
I am a wizard of the First Order.
But are you sure?
Addie, you must take my word. I don't give it lightly. I'm not sure it will work, but I believe it may. Right now the important thing is to use what we know, what you and I know, to stop the Keeper from tearing the veil. It would be wrong to use what I know for selfish reasons and thus endanger the safety of everyone else. Maintaining the veil requires a delicate balance of forces. This could disturb it. It could even be that such a use would tear the veil.
She took her hand from his arm and wiped a stray strand of gray hair from her face.
Forgive me, said, you'll be right. I have studied the cusp between the worlds for most of my life. I should know better. Forgive me.
He smiled as he hugged her around her shoulders.
I'm gratified that you hold your vows to be so important. It means that you are a person of honor. There's no better ally than a person of honor.
She looked around her shattered home.
It just be that I have spent my life gathering these things. I have been their caretaker for so long. Others have entrusted them to me.
Zed walked her out of the rubble.
Others have invested their trust in you to use the gift you were given to protect those without power. They are the ones who wrote the prophecies. You have been brought to this point for a reason. That's the trust you must keep.
She nodded, rubbing a thin hand on his back as they walked away from the remains of her home.
Zed, I think several other bones be missing too.
I know.
They be dangerous in the wrong hands.
I know that too.
Then what do you plan to do about it?
I plan to do what the prophecies say is the only thing that gives us a chance at closing the veil.
And what be that, old man?
Helping Richard. We must find a way to help him, for the prophecies say he is the only one who can close the veil.
Neither looked back as fire roared to life, roiling and racing through the ruins, dancing through the bones. Chapter 26. Queen Cirilla held her head high. She refused to acknowledge how much the coarse fingers of the brutes who held her were hurting her arms. She didn't resist as they walked her down the filthy corridor. Resistance was hopeless anyway, and would bring her no aid. She would conduct herself now, as always, with dignity. She was the queen of Galea. She would endure with dignity what was to come. She would not show her terror. Besides, it was not what was being done to her that mattered. It was what was going to happen to the Galean people that grieved her, and what had already happened. Nearly 100 of the Galean guard had been murdered before her eyes. Who could have foreseen that they would be set upon in this, of all places, on neutral ground? That a few had escaped was no solace. They, too, would probably be hunted down and killed. She hoped that her brother, Prince Harold, had been among those who had escaped. If he had gotten away, perhaps he could rally a defense against the worst slaughter that was yet to come. The brutal hands on her arms brought her to a halt next to a hissing torch set in a rust-encrusted bracket. The fingers twisted so painfully that a small cry escaped her lips despite her will to stifle it.
Are my men hurting you, my lady?
Came a mocking voice from behind. She coolly denied Prince Phyron the satisfaction of an answer. A guard worked keys at a rusty lock, sending a sharp metallic sound echoing down the stone corridor when the bolt finally drew. The heavy door groaned on its hinges as it was pulled open. The vice-like hands forced her on, through the doorway and down another long, low passageway. She could hear the swish of her satin skirts, and to the sides, and behind, the men's boots on the stone floor, splashing occasionally through stagnant, foul-smelling water. The dank air felt cold on her shoulders, which were unaccustomed to being uncovered. Her heart threatened to race out of control when she thought about where she was being taken. She prayed to the dear spirits that there wouldn't be rats. She feared rats, their sharp teeth, their clutching claws, and their cunning black eyes. When she was very little, she had nightmares about rats and would wake screaming. In an effort to bring her heart back under control, she tried to think of other things. She thought about the strange woman who had sought a private audience with her. Cirilla wasn't at all sure why she had granted it, but she now wished she had paid more heed to the insistent woman. What was her name? Lady something. A glimpse of her hair beneath the concealing veil had shown it to be too short for someone of her standing. Lady Bevanvere. Yes, that was it. Lady Bevanvere. Lady Bevanvere of someplace. She couldn't will her mind to remember. It didn't matter anyway. It was not where the woman was from, but what she had said that mattered. Leave Aidendrill, Lady Bevanvere had warned. Leave at once. But Cirilla had not come all this way in the teeth of winter to leave before the Council of the Midlands had heard her grievance and acted upon it. She had come to demand that the Council do its duty to bring an immediate halt to the transgressions against her land and people. Towns had been sacked, farms burned, and people murdered. The armies of Kelton were massing to attack. An invasion was imminent, if not already underway. And for what? Nothing but naked conquest, against an ally. It was an outrage. It was the Council's duty to come to the defense of any land being attacked, no matter by whom. The whole point of the Council of the Midlands was to prevent just such treason. It was their duty to direct all the lands to come to the aid of Galia and put down the aggression. Though Galia was a powerful land, it had been gravely weakened by its defense of the Midlands against Dahara, and was not prepared for another costly war. Kelton had been spared the brunt of the Daharan conquest, and had reserves aplenty. Galia had paid the price of resistance in their stead. The night before, Lady Bevanvere had come to her, and had begged that she leave at once. She had said Cirilla would find no help for Galia from the council. The Lady Bevanvere said that if the Queen stayed, she would be in great personal danger. At first, when pressed, Lady Bevanvere refused to explain herself. Cirilla thanked her, but said she would not turn away from her duty to her people, and would go before the council as planned. Lady Bevanvere broke down in tears, begging that the Queen heed her words. She at last confided that she had had a vision. Cirilla tried to draw the nature of the vision out of the woman, but she had said that it was incomplete, that she didn't know any details, only that if the Queen didn't leave at once, something terrible would happen. Though Cirilla trusted well the powers of magic, she had little faith in fortune-tellers. Most were charlatans, seeking only to fatten their purse with a clever turn of phrase, or a vague hint of danger to be avoided. Queen Cirilla was touched by the woman's seeming sincerity, though she reasoned it might be nothing but deception, meant to trick her out of a coin. A ruse for money seemed strange coming from a woman of such seeming wealth, but times had been hard, and she knew the wealthy were not immune to losses. After all, if gold and goods were to be seized, it only made sense to seek them from those who had them. Cirilla knew many who had worked hard all their lives only to lose everything in the war with Dahara. Perhaps Lady Bevanvere's short hair was the result of that loss. She thanked the woman, but told her that the mission was too important to be turned aside. She pressed a gold piece into the woman's hand, only to have Lady Bevanvere throw the coin across the room before rushing off in tears. Cirilla had been shaken by that. A charlatan did not refuse gold. Unless, of course, she sought something more. Either the woman had been telling the truth, or she was working in aid of Kelton, trying to prevent the council from hearing the aggression. Either way, it didn't matter. Cirilla was resolute. Besides, she was influential in the council. Galia was respected for its defense of the Midlands. When Adendrill had fallen, councillors who had refused to swear the allegiance of their land to Dahara had been put to death and replaced by puppets. Those councillors who had collaborated were allowed to retain their position. Galia's loyal ambassador to the council had been executed. How the war had ended was a puzzle. Daharan forces were told that Darkin Rall was dead, and all hostilities were ended. A new Lord Rall had succeeded, and the troops were simply called home or ordered to help those they had conquered. Cirilla suspected Darkin Rall had been assassinated. Whatever had happened was good by her. The council was now back in the hands of the people of the Midlands, the ones who collaborated, and the puppets had been arrested. Things were said to be set back to the way they had been before the dictator. She expected the council would come to the aid of Galia. Queen Cirilla, too, had an ally on the council, the most powerful ally there was, the Mother Confessor. Although Caelan was her half-sister, that held no sway. Galia and the Queen supported the independence of the different lands and the peace of the Midlands through the council. Galia had always advocated unity of purpose. The Mother Confessor respected that steadfastness, and that was what made her Galia's ally. Caelan had never shown Cirilla any favoritism. And that was as it should have been. Favoritism would have weakened the Mother Confessor, threatening the alliance of the council and therefore peace. She respected Caelan for putting the unity of the Midlands above any power games. Such games were a shifting bog anyway. One was always better off in the end when dealt with fairly. rather than by favor. Cirilla had always been secretly proud of her half-sister. Kaylin was 12 years younger, smart, strong, and despite her young age, an astute leader. Though they were related by blood, they almost never spoke of it. Kaylin was a confessor, and of the magic. She was not a sister who shared the blood of a father, but a confessor and the mother confessor of the Midlands. Confessors were blood to no one but confessors. Still, having no family of her own, save her beloved brother, Harold, she had often longed to take Kaylin in her arms as kin, as a little sister, and speak of the things they shared. But that was not possible. Cirilla was the queen of Galia, and Kaylin was the mother confessor. Two women who were virtual strangers who shared nothing save blood and mutual respect. Duty came before the heart. Galia was Cirilla's family. The confessors, Kaylin's. Though there were those who resented Kaylin's mother taking Wyborn as a mate, Cirilla was not among them. Her mother, Queen Bernadine, had taught her and Harold the need for confessors, their need for strong blood in that line of magic, and how it served the greater cause of the Midlands in keeping peace. Her mother had never spoken bitterly of losing her husband to the confessors, but explained instead the honor Cirilla and Harold had of sharing blood with the confessors, even if it was mostly unspoken. Yes, she was proud of Kaylin. Proud, but also perhaps a bit wary. The ways of confessors were a mystery to her. From birth, they were trained in Aedendrill. Trained by other confessors and by wizards, their magic, their power, was something they were born with. And in a way, they were slaves to it. In some ways, it was the same with her, born to be queen without much choice. Though she had no magic, she understood the weight of birthright. From birth until their training was complete, confessors were kept cloistered, like priestesses in a world apart. Their discipline was said to be rigorous. Though Cirilla knew they must have emotions like anyone, confessors were trained to subjugate them. Duty to their power was all. It left them no choice in life save choosing a mate, and even that was not for love but for duty. Cirilla had always wished she could bring a little of the love of a sister to Kaylin. Perhaps she also wished Kaylin could have brought a little of that love to her, too. But it could never be. Maybe Kaylin had loved her from afar, as Cirilla had Kaylin. Perhaps Kaylin had been proud of her, too, in her own way. She had always hoped it was so. The thing that pained her the most was that though they both served the Midlands, she was loved by her people for doing her duty, but Kaylin was feared and hated for it. She wished Kaylin could know a people's love. It was a comfort that in part made up for the sacrifice. But a confessor never could. Perhaps, she thought, that was why they were taught to subjugate their emotions and needs. Kaylin, too, had tried to warn her of the danger from Kelton. It had been at the Midsummer Festival several years ago, the first summer after the death of Cirilla's mother. The first summer Cirilla had been queen. The first summer, too, since Kaylin had ascended to Mother Confessor. That Kaylin had become the Mother Confessor at such a young age spoke of both the strength of her power and of her character, and perhaps of a need. Since the selection was made in secrecy, Cirilla knew little about the succession of confessors, except that it was done without animosity or rivalry, and had to do with the strength of power weighed against age and training. To the people of the Midlands, age was irrelevant. They feared confessors in general, regardless of age, and the mother confessor in particular. They knew she was the most powerful of confessors. Unlike most people, however, Cirilla knew that power in and of itself was not necessarily something to fear, and Kaylin had always been fair. She had never sought anything but peace. That day, the streets of Emenicia, the crown city of Galia, had been filled with festivities of every sort. Not even the lowest stable boy had failed to find welcome at the tables of the fair, or at the games, or around the musicians, acrobats, and jugglers. Cirilla, as queen, had presided over the contests and given ribbons to the victors. She had never seen so many smiling faces, so many happy people. She had never felt so contented for her people, or been made to feel so loved by them. That night there was a royal ball at the palace. The great hall was filled with nearly 400 people. It was dazzling to see everyone in their most elegant dress. Food and wine were arrayed on the long tables in abundant and stunning variety, only fitting for the most important day of the year. It was grand beyond any ball that had come before, for there was much for which to be thankful, It was a time of peace and prosperity, growth and promise, new life and bounty. The music trailed off in thin, discordant notes, and the loud drone of the gathering fell suddenly dead silent as the Mother Confessor strode purposefully into the hall, her wizard at her heels, his silver robes flying behind. Her regal-looking white dress stood out among the confusion of color like the full moon among the stars. Bright color and fancy dress had never looked so unexpectedly trivial. Everyone bowed low at her passing. Cirilla waited with her advisors beside the table on which sat a large, cut-glass bowl of spiced wine. Kaelin crossed the hushed room, followed by every eye, and drew to a halt before the queen, giving a prompt bow of her head. Her expression was as still as ice. She didn't wait for the formality of the bow to her office to be returned. "Queen Cirilla, you have an advisor named Drefan Tross?" Cirilla held her open hand out to the side. "This is he." Kaelin's emotionless gaze moved to Drefan. "I would speak with you in private." "Drefan Tross is a trusted advisor," Cirilla interrupted. "He was more than that. He was a man she was very fond of, a man she was beginning to fall in love with. You may speak to him in my presence." She didn't know what this was about, but thought it best if she were privy to it. Confessors did not interrupt banquets except for trouble. "This is neither the time nor place to conduct business of this sort, Mother Confessor. But if it cannot wait, then let it be done and finished with here and now." She thought that would put it in abeyance until a more appropriate time. Without expression, the Mother Confessor considered this a moment. The wizard at her back was anything but expressionless. He appeared quite agitated, in fact. He bent toward Kaelin to speak, but she raised her hand to silence him before he could begin. "As you wish. I am sorry, Queen Cirilla, but it cannot wait." She returned her attention to Drefan. "I have just taken the confession of a murderer. In his confession, he also revealed himself to be an accomplice to an assassin. He named you as that assassin, and your target as Queen Cirilla." There were astonished whispers from those near enough to overhear. Drefan's face went red. The whispers died into brittle silence. Cirilla could scarcely follow what happened next. A blink of the eye, and it would have been missed. One instant Drefan stood as he had, with his hand in his gold and deep blue coat, and the next he was driving a knife toward the Mother Confessor. Standing tall, she moved only her arm, catching his wrist. Seemingly at the same time, there was a violent impact to the air, thunder, but no sound. The cut glass bowl shattered, flooding red wine over the table and floor. Cirilla flinched with a sudden flash of pain coursing through every joint in her body. The knife clattered to the floor. Drefan's eyes went wide, his jaw slack.
"Mistress,"
he whispered reverently. Cirilla was numb with shock to see a confessor use her power. She knew only of its after-effects and had never seen it being used. Few had. The magic seemed still to sizzle in the air a long moment. The crowd pressed closer. A warning glare from the wizard changed their curiosity to timidity, and they moved back. Kaelin looked drained, but her voice betrayed no weakness. "You intended to assassinate the queen?"
"Yes, mistress,"
he said eagerly, licking his lips. "When?"
"Tonight, in the confusion when the guests were departing."
Drefan looked to be in torment. Tears welled up and ran down his cheeks.
"Please, mistress, command me. Tell me what you wish. Let me carry out your command."
Cirilla was still in shock. This was what had been done to her father. This was how he had been taken as a mate to a confessor. First her father, and now a man she held dear. "Wait in silence," Kaelin ordered. Hands hanging at her sides, she turned to Cirilla, her young eyes now heavy with sorrow. "Forgive me for disturbing your celebration, Queen Cirilla, but I fear the results of delay." Her face burning, Cirilla twisted to face Drefan. He stood gaping at Kaelin. "Who ordered this, Drefan? Who ordered you to kill me?" He didn't even seem to be aware she had spoken. "He will not answer you, Queen Cirilla," Kaelin said. "He will only answer me."
"Then you ask."
"That would not be advisable," the wizard offered quietly. Cirilla felt a fool. Everyone knew of her fondness for Drefan. Everyone saw now that she had been duped. No one would ever forget this Midsummer Festival.
Do not presume to advise me.
Kaelin leaned closer and spoke softly. Cirilla, we think he may be protected by a spell. When I asked his accomplice that question, he died before he could answer. But I believe I know the answer. There are oblique ways of getting the information that might possibly circumvent the spell. If I could take him somewhere alone and question him in my own way, we might be able to get the answer. Cirilla was near tears with fury.
I trusted him. He was close to me. He has betrayed me. Me, not you. I will know who sent him. I will hear it from his own lips. You stand in my kingdom, in my home. Ask him.
Kaelin straightened, her face returning to the calm mask that showed nothing. As you wish. She redirected her attention to Drefin. Was what you intended to do to the queen of your own volition? He dry-washed his hands in anxious anticipation of pleasing the Mother Confessor.
No, mistress, I was sent.
If it was possible, Kaelin's face seemed to become even more placid. Who sent you? One hand rose, and his mouth opened, as if in an attempt to do her bidding. All that came from his throat was a gurgle of blood before he collapsed. The wizard gave a knowing grunt. As I thought, the same as the other. Kaelin picked up the knife and offered it, handle first to Cirilla. We believe there to be a conspiracy of great magnitude brewing. Whether or not this man was part of it, I don't know, but he was sent by Kelton.
Kelton? I refuse to believe that.
Kaelin nodded at the knife in Cirilla's hand. The knife is Keltish. Many people carry weapons forged in Kelton. They are some of the finest made. That is hardly proof enough for such an accusation. Kaelin stood unmoving. Cirilla was too upset at that moment to wonder what thoughts could have been going on behind those green eyes. Kaelin's voice finally came without emotion. My father taught me that the Keltons will strike only for two reasons. First, out of jealousy, and second, when they are tempted by weakness. He said that either way, they will always first test by trying to kill the strongest, highest ranking of their opponents they can. Galea is now the strongest it has ever been, thanks to you, and the Midsummer Festival is the mark of that strength. You are the cause of that jealousy, and a symbol of that strength. My father also said that you must always keep an eye to the Keltons, and never offer them your back. He said that if you ever thwart them in the first attempt, it deepens their hunger for your blood, and they will always lie in wait for any weakness, so that they may strike. Cirilla's smoldering rage at being beguiled by Drefin made her lash out without considering her words. I would not know what our father said. I never had the benefit of his teachings. He was taken from us by a confessor. Kaelin's face transformed from the calm, cold blankness of a confessor to the look of ageless, knowing benevolence that seemed well beyond her years. Perhaps, Queen Cirilla, the good spirits chose to spare you the things he would have taught you, and had him teach me instead. Be thankful they have looked kindly upon you. I doubt the things he taught would have brought you any joy. They bring me none, save perhaps that they have helped me preserve your life this night. Please do not be bitter. Be at peace with yourself and cherish what you do have, the love of your people. They are your family, one and all. Kaelin started to turn away, but Cirilla gently caught her arm and drew her aside as men bent to carry the body from the hall.
Kaelin, forgive me.
Her fingers worked a ribbon at her waist. I have wrongly directed my anger over Drefin to you. I understand, Cirilla. In your place, I would have probably reacted the same. I could see your feelings for Drefin in your eyes. I would not expect you to be happy over what I have just done. Forgive me for bringing anguish to your home on a day that should be only joyful, but I greatly feared the results of delay. Kaelin had made her feel like the younger sister. She looked anew at the tall, beautiful young woman standing before her. Kaelin was of the age to have a mate. Perhaps she already had chosen one, for all she knew. Her mother must have been about this old when she took Cirilla's father as hers. So young. Looking into those depthless green eyes, Cirilla let go of some of her anger over Drefin. This young woman, her sister, had just saved her life, knowing full well it would bring no thanks and would probably earn her only deeper fear and possibly undying hatred from her half-sister. So young, Cirilla felt shame at her own selfishness. She smiled at Kaelin for the first time. Surely the things Wyvern taught you weren't all grim? He taught me only killing. whom to kill, when to kill, and how to kill. Be thankful you know no more of his lessons, and that you have never needed what he taught. I have, and I fear, I have only begun to use what he taught me." Cirilla frowned. Kalin was a confessor, not a killer.
"Why would you say such a thing?"
"We believe we have uncovered a conspiracy. I will not speak of it until I know its nature and have proof, but I think it may bring a storm beyond any you or I have ever seen before."
Cirilla touched her sister's cheek, the only time in her life she had ever done so.
"Kalin, please stay. Enjoy at my side what is left of the festival. I would love to have you with me."
Kalin's face returned to the calm mask of a confessor. "I cannot. It would only ruin your people's light heart to have me present. Thank you for the offer, but you should be able to enjoy your day with your people without my spoiling it further."
"Nonsense, it would spoil nothing."
"I would like nothing more than that it were so, but it is not. Remember what our father said, keep a wary eye to the Keltons. I must be gone. There is trouble gathering, and I must see that the confessors find its cause. Before I return to Adendrill, I will pay a visit to Kelton and deliver my suspicions, and a warning that what has happened not be repeated. I will inform the council of the trouble of this day, so that all lies will be on the Keltons. What did they teach in Adendrill that could turn what looked to be porcelain to iron?
Thank you, Mother Confessor, was all she had been able to say, to offer her sister the honor of her office as she watched her stride off, her wizard in tow. That had been the most intimate conversation she had ever had with her half-sister. The Midsummer Festival had not held much joy for her after Kalin had left. So young, yet so old. At the council today, Cirilla had been surprised to find that the Mother Confessor was not presiding over the council. No one knew where she was. It was to be expected she would have been absent when Adendrill fell. She was frequently gone in her capacity as a confessor, and had probably been doing what she could to halt the threat from Dahara. All the confessors had fiercely fought the hordes from Dahara. She was sure Kalin would have done no less, using in part what her father had taught her. But that she had not immediately returned to Adendrill when Dahara withdrew was worrisome. Perhaps she had not yet had time to return. Cirilla feared Kalin might have been killed at the hands of a Quad. Dahara had sentenced all the confessors to death and hunted them relentlessly. Galea had offered refuge to the confessors, but the Quads, implacable and without mercy, had found them anyway. Worse, absent the Mother Confessor, there had not been a wizard overseeing the council meeting. Cirilla's flesh had prickled with apprehension at seeing no wizard. She recognized that the absence of a confessor and a wizard created a dangerous vacuum in the council chambers. But when she saw who presided over the council session, her apprehension sharpened to alarm. Sitting in the first chair was High Prince Fyron of Kelton. The very man she had come to seek deliverance from sat in judgment. To see him sitting in the chair that had always belonged only to the Mother Confessor was startling. The council, it would seem, had not been put back to the way it should have been. Nonetheless, she ignored him and instead pressed her demands to the rest of the council. In turn, Prince Fyron stood and accused her of treason against the Midlands. He had the unmitigated gall to accuse her of the very thing of which he was guilty. Further, Prince Fyron assured the council that Kelton was committing no aggression, but was acting only in self-defense against a greedy neighbor. In a tirade, he lectured them on the evils of women in positions of power. The council took his word for everything. They allowed her to present no evidence. She stood stunned and speechless as the council heard Fyron's charges and without pause found her guilty, sentencing her to be beheaded. Where was Kalin? Where were the wizards? Lady Bevanvere's vision had proven true. Cirilla should have listened or at least taken some precaution. Kalin's warning, too, had proven true. Kelton had first tried to strike out of jealousy, and now, years later, they had renewed the attack when they saw tempting weakness. The Galean guard stood in the great courtyard, ready to immediately escort Cirilla home. She had needed to set about readying Galea's defenses until the forces expected to be sent by the council could arrive. But it was not to be. At the pronouncement of sentence, she heard the terrible shouts of battle outside. Battle, she thought bitterly. It was not a battle, but a slaughter. Her troops had waited in the great courtyard without their weapons as a sign of respect and deference, an open gesture of acquiescence to the rule of the Council of the Midlands. Queen Cirilla stood at the window, a guard at each arm, shaking in horror as she watched the slaughter. A few of her men managed to take up weapons by overpowering their attackers and put up a valiant struggle, but they had no chance. They were outnumbered 5-1 and were, by and large, without means to defend themselves. She couldn't tell if in the chaos any escaped. She hoped they had. She prayed Harold had. The white snow that lay upon the ground was turned to a sea of red. She was aghast at the butchery. There was mercy only in its swiftness. Cirilla had been made to kneel before the council as Prince Fyron took up her long hair in his fist and with his own sword sliced it away. She had knelt in silence, her head held proudly up in honor of her people, in honor of the men she had just seen murdered, while he cut her hair as short as the lowest kitchen scullion. What an hour before had seemed to be the near end of her people's ordeal had become instead the mere beginning. The powerful fingers on her arms jerked her to a halt before a small iron door. She winced in pain. A crude ladder, twice her height, lay on its side against the wall on the opposite side of the corridor. Again the guard with the keys came forward to work the lock. He cursed the mechanism, complaining that its lack of use made it stiff. All the guards seemed to be Keltons. She had seen none of the Adendrill home guard. Most she knew had been killed in Adendrill's fall to Dahara. At last the man drew back the door to reveal a dark pit. Her legs felt as if they wanted to turn liquid. Only the hands gripping her arms held her up. They were going to put her in that dark pit with the rats. She willed her legs solid again. She was the queen, but her pulse would not slow. How dare you put a lady in a rat-infested hole? Prince Fyron stepped close to the black maw. One hand on a hip, held back his unbuttoned royal blue coat. With his other hand, he hefted a torch from a bracket.
Rats? Is that what worries you, my lady? Rats?
He gave her a derisive smile. He was too young to be so well schooled at insolence. Had her arms been free, she would have slapped him.
Let me allay your fears, Queen Cirilla.
He tossed the torch into the blackness. As it dropped, it illuminated faces. A husky fist caught the torch. There were men in the pit, at least 6, maybe 10. Prince Fyron leaned into the doorway, his voice echoing into the hole.
The queen worries that there may be rats down there.
Rats?
Came a coarse voice from the pit.
There be no rats down here, not anymore. We ate them all.
A hand with white ruffles at the wrist still rested on Prince Fyron's hip. His voice taunted with feigned concern.
There, you see. The man says there are no rats. Does that ease your apprehension, my lady?
Her eyes darted between the flickering torchlight below and Fyron.
Who are those men?
Why, just a few murderers and rapists, awaiting their beheading, same as you. Quite vile animals, actually. What with all I've had to attend to, I haven't had time to see to their sentences. I'm afraid being down in the pit for so long puts them in an ugly disposition.
His grin returned.
But I'm sure having a queen among them will mellow their mood.
Cirilla had to force her voice to come.
I demand my own cell.
The grin vanished, an eyebrow lifted.
Demand? You demand?
He suddenly struck her across the face.
You demand nothing. You are nothing but a common criminal, a loathsome murderer of my people. You have been tried and convicted.
Her cheek burned with the sting of his handprint.
You can't put me in there with them.
Her whispered entreaty was hopeless, she knew, but she couldn't keep it from her lips. Fyron rolled his shoulders, straightening his back and coat as he regained his composure. His voice rose to those below.
You men wouldn't defile a lady, would you?
Soft laughter echoed up from the pit.
Why, of course not. We wouldn't want to be beheaded twice.
The coarse voice deepened into cold menace.
We'll treat her real nice-like.
Cirilla could taste warm, salty blood at the corner of her mouth.
Fyron, you can't do this. I demand to be beheaded at once.
There you go again, demanding. Why can't it be done now? Let it be done now.
He drew his hand back to slap her again, but then let it lower, as his simper returned.
You see, at first you proclaimed your innocence and didn't want to be executed, but already you are reconsidering. After a few days down there with them, you will be begging to be beheaded. You will eagerly confess your treason before all those gathered to witness your punishment. Besides, I have other matters to attend to. I can't be bothered right now. You will be put to death when I deem I have the time.
With rising terror, she was only now beginning to grasp the full extent of the fate that awaited her in the pit. Tears burned her eyes.
Please, don't do this to me. I'm begging you.
Prince Fyron smoothed the white ruffles at his throat and spoke softly.
I tried to make it easy for you, Cirilla, because you're a woman. Drefin's knife would have been quick. You would have suffered little that way. I would never have allowed a man in your place such mercy. But you wouldn't have it the easy way. You allowed the Mother Confessor to interfere. You allowed yet another woman to infringe on the dominion of men. Women don't have the stomach for ruling. They're ill-suited to the task. They should never be allowed to command armies or to meddle in the affairs of nations. Things have to be set right. Drefin died trying to do it the easy way. Now we do it the other way.
He nodded to a man behind him. The guard hauled the ladder to the doorway to lower an end into the pit as the hands on her arms moved her to the edge. The other men drew swords, apparently to prevent any in the pit from thinking to come up the ladder. Cirilla could think of no way to stop this. She voiced a protest, knowing it was foolish, but unable to check her panic.
I'm a queen, a lady. I will not be made to scurry down a rickety ladder.
Prince Fyron blinked at her ludicrous objection, but then motioned with his hand for the man to pull the ladder back from the doorway. He gave a mocking bow.
As you wish, my lady.
He rose, giving a slight nod to the men holding her arms. They released her. Before she thought to move a muscle, he rammed the heel of his hand into her chest between her breasts. The painful blow knocked her off balance. She toppled backward through the opening, down into the pit. As she plummeted, she fully expected to strike the stone floor and be killed. She resigned to it with a last gasp as the futile flow of her past glory whirled before her mind's eye. Had it all come to this, all for naught? To have her skull cracked like an egg fallen from a table to the floor? But hands caught her. Hands were everywhere upon her, unexpectedly upon the most indecent places. Her eyes opened to see the light of the doorway go dark with a loud reverberating clang. Faces were all around her in the haunting, flickering torchlight. Scruffy, whiskered faces. Ugly, sweaty, wicked faces. Cunning black eyes played over her. Hungry, humorless grins showed crooked, sharp teeth. So many teeth! Her throat clenched shut, locking her breath in her lungs. Her mind refused to function and flashed with confusing, useless images. She was pressed to the floor. The stone was cold and painfully rough against her back. Grunts and low squeals assailed her from every side. Men were tight together above her. Against her struggles, her limbs were pushed and pulled as the men willed. Clutching, claw-like hands ripped at her fine dress and pinched brutally at suddenly, shockingly exposed flesh. And then Cirilla did something she hadn't done since she was a little girl. She screamed. Chapter 27. Except for her thumb and forefinger idly turning the smooth round bone on her necklace, Kaelin stood motionless as she studied the sprawling city. The surrounding rugged slope seemed to tenderly cradle the buildings that filled nearly the length and breadth of a gently rolling valley. Steeply pitched slate roofs pricked the land within the ribbon of wall, with the higher peaks of the palace off to the northern end, but not so much as a wisp of smoke rose from the hundreds of stone chimneys into the clear air. She saw no movement. The arrow straight south road leading to the main gate, the smaller meandering roads that branched off to end at the lesser gates, and those which bypassed the outer walls altogether to lead north, were deserted. The sloping mountain meadow before her lay buried beneath a white winter blanket. A light breeze liberated the burden of snow from a sagging branch of a nearby pine, freeing a sparkling cloud to curl away. The same breeze ruffled the white wolf fur of the thick mantle snugged against her cheek, but she hardly noticed. Brendan and Tossadin had made the mantle for her to keep her warm on their way northeast through the bitter winter storms that raked the bleak land they had traveled. Wolves were fearful of people and rarely let themselves be seen, so she knew little of their habits. The brothers' arrows had found their mark where she saw nothing. If she hadn't seen Richard shoot, she would have thought the shots impossible. The brothers were almost as good as he. Though she had always held a vague enmity for wolves, she had never actually been harried by them. Since Richard had told her of their close family packs, she had come to feel an affection for them. She hadn't wanted the two brothers to kill wolves to make the warm cape, but they insisted that it was necessary, and in the end, she had acquiesced. It had sickened her to watch the carcasses being skinned, revealing the red muscle beneath, and white of bone and sinew, the substance of being so elegant when filled with life and spirit, so suddenly morbid when left with neither. As the brothers went about the grisly task, she could think only of Brophy, the man she had touched with her power, only to have it prove him innocent. He had been turned to a wolf by her wizard Giller to release him from the power of a confessor's magic, so he could start over in a new life. She had wondered at how saddened these wolves' families must have been when they never returned, as she knew Brophy's mate and pack must have been when he was killed. She had seen so much killing. She was weary nearly to tears of it, at the way it seemed to go on without an end in sight. At least the three men had felt no pride or joy at having killed the magnificent animals, and had said a prayer to the spirits of their brother wolves, as they had called them. "We should not be doing this," Chandelin grumbled. He was leaning on his spear, watching her, she knew, but she didn't take her eyes from the silent city below. The two still seen. His tone was not as sharp as it usually was. It betrayed his awe at seeing a city the size of Ebenezia. He had never before been far from the Mud People's lands, had never seen this many buildings, especially none of such grand scale. When he had first taken in the size of it, his brown eyes had stared in silent wonder he could not conceal, and his acid tongue for once had forsaken him. Having lived his whole life in the village out on the plains, it must look to him as if he were seeing the result of magic, not mere human effort. She felt a small pang of sorrow for him and the two brothers, that their simple view of the outside world had to be shattered. Well, they would see more before this journey was ended that would astonish them further. Chandelin, I have spent a great effort, nearly every waking moment, teaching you and Prendon and Tossadin to speak my language. No one where we will go will speak yours. It is for your own good that I do this. You are free to believe that I am being spiteful or that I am doing as I say, being mindful of your safety outside your land, but either way, you will speak to me in the tongue I have taught you. His tone tightened, but still could not disguise how humbled he was at seeing a great city for the first time. It was far from the greatest he would see. Perhaps, too, it betrayed something she had never before sensed from him. Fear. I am to take you to Aedendrill, not this place. We should not be using our time at this place. His inflection implied he thought a place such as this could be only evil. Squinting against the blindingly bright sun on white snow, she saw the two figures far below, starting up the slope. She let the round bone slip from her fingers. I'm the Mother Confessor. It's my duty to protect all the people of the Midlands, the same way I work to safeguard the Mud People. You bring no help to my people, only trouble. His protest seemed more habit than a heartfelt challenge. She answered it in a quiet, tired murmur. Enough, Chandelin. Thankfully, he didn't press the argument, but turned his anger elsewhere. Prendon and Tossadin should not come up the hill in the open like that. I have taught them not to be so stupid. If they were boys, I would strike their bottoms. Anyone can see where they go. Will you do as I say, and come out of the open now? She let him shepherd her back into the shroud of trees, not because she thought it necessary, but because she wanted to let him know she respected his efforts to protect her. Despite his animosity at being forced to go on this journey, he had done his duty, watching over her constantly, as had the two brothers, they with smiles and concern, he with a scowl and suspicion. All three made her feel like a precious, fragile cargo that must be tended at all times. The brothers, she knew, were sincere. Chandelin, she was sure, saw his mission only as a task that must be performed, no matter how onerous. We should go quickly from here, he pressed again. Kaelin withdrew a hand from under the fur mantle and pulled a stray strand of her long hair back from her face. It is my duty to know what has happened here.
You said your duty was to go to Adendrill, as Richard with the Temper asked.
Kaelin turned away without answering, moving deeper into the snow-crusted trees. She missed Richard more than she could bear. Every time she closed her eyes, she saw his face, as it had looked when he thought she had betrayed him. She wanted to drop to her knees and let out the scream that seemed to be always there, trapped just below the surface, trying to find a way past her restraint, a scream born of her horror at what she had done. But what else could she have done? If what she had learned was true, and the veil to the underworld was torn, and Richard was in fact the only one who could close it, and if the collar was the only thing that could save his life and give him the chance to close the veil, then she had had no choice. How could she have made any other decision? How could Richard ever respect her if she didn't face her responsibilities to the greater good? The Richard she loved would eventually realize that. He had to. But if any of it was not true, then she had delivered the man she loved into his worst nightmare for nothing. She wondered again if Richard often looked at the lock of her hair she had given him and thought of her. She hoped that he could find it in himself to understand and forgive her. She wanted so much to tell him how much she loved him. She yearned to hold him to her. She wanted only to get to Adendrill, to Zed, for help. But she had to know what had happened here. She stiffened her back with resolve. She was the Mother Confessor. She had intended to skirt Ebenicia, but for the last 2 days they had been coming across the frozen corpses of women. Never any men, only women, from young to old, children to grandmothers. Most were half-naked, some without clothes at all. And in the dead of winter, while most had been alone, a few were together, huddled in frozen death, too exhausted or too frightened or too disoriented to have sought shelter. They had run from Ebenicia, not in disorderly haste, but in panic, choosing to freeze to death rather than remain. Most, too, had been badly abused before they had scattered in every direction into the mountainous countryside. Kaelin knew what had been done to them, what had made them make the choice they did. The three men knew, too, but none would voice it aloud. She pulled her warm mantle tighter around herself. This atrocity couldn't have been at the hands of the armies of Dahara. It was far too recent. The troops from Dahara had been called home. Surely they wouldn't have done this after they had been told the war was ended. Unable to stand for another moment, not knowing what fate had befallen Ebenicia, she pushed her bow farther up on her shoulder and started down the hillside. Her leg muscles were at long last used to the wide-footed gait needed to walk on her snowshoes the men had made from willow and sinew. Chandelin charged after her. "You must not go down there. There could be dangerous."
"Danger," she corrected, as she hitched her pack up higher. "If there was danger, Prindon and Tossadin would not be out in the open. You may come, or you may wait here, but I'm going down there."
Knowing argument was useless, he followed in a rare fit of silence. The bright afternoon sun brought no warmth to the bitterly cold day. There was usually wind at the fringe of the Rangshada Mountains, but thankfully there was little this day for a change. It hadn't snowed for several days, and they had been able to make better time in the clear weather. Still, with every breath she took, the air felt as if it were turning the inside of her nose to ice. She intercepted Prindon and Tossadin halfway down the slope. They brought themselves to a halt before her, leaning on their spears, breathing heavily, which was unusual for them as nothing seemed to tire them. But they were unaccustomed to the altitude. Their faces were pale, and their handsome twin smiles long gone.
"Please, Mother Confessor," Prindon said, pausing to catch his breath from the strenuous climb. "You must not go to that place. The ancestor spirits of those people have abandoned them."
Kaelin untied a water skin from her waist and pulled it from under her mantle, where her body's heat kept the water from freezing. She held it up to Prindon, urging him to take a drink before questioning him. "What did you see? You didn't go into the city, did you? I told you not to go inside the walls." Prindon handed the water skin to his panting brother.
"No, we stay hidden, as you told us. We do not go inside, but we do not need to."
He licked a drop of water from his lower lip. "We see enough from outside." She took back the water skin when Tossadin finished and replaced the stopper.
"Did you see any people?"
Tossadin stole a quick glance over his shoulder down the hill.
"We see many people."
Prindon wiped his nose on the back of his hand as he looked from his brother to her.
Dead people? How many? Dead from what?
Tossadin tugged loose the thong, holding his fur mantle tight at his neck.
Dead from fighting?
Most are men with weapons, swords, and spears and bows. There are more than I know the words to count. I have never seen that many men. In my whole life I have not seen that many men. There has been war here, war, and killing of those defeated.
Kaelin stared at them for a moment as horror threatened to choke off her breath. She had hoped that somehow the people of Ebenicia had escaped, that they had fled.
A war. Had the Daharan forces done this after the war was ended? Or was it something else? Her muscles at last unlocked, and she started down the hill, the mantle billowing open, letting in the icy air. Her heart pounded with dread at what had befallen the people of Ebenicia.
I must go down there to see what has happened. Please, Mother Confessor, do not go!
Prindon called after her. It is bad to see. The three men jumped to follow as she marched down the hill, the slope speeding her effort.
I have seen dead people before.
They began encountering the sprawled corpses, apparently the sites of skirmishes, a good distance from the city walls. Snow had drifted against them, partially covering them. In one place, a hand reached up from the snow, as if the man below were drowning and reaching for air. Most had not been touched by animals or birds, there being an overabundance for scavengers. All were soldiers of the Galean army, frozen in death where they had fallen, blood-soaked clothes frozen rock solid to them, ghastly wounds frozen open. At the south wall, where huge oak doors crisscrossed with iron strapping had stood, was a gaping hole through the stone, its edges melted and burned black. Kaelin stood staring at rock melted like wax from a candle that had guttered. She knew of only one power that could do that. Wizard's fire. Her mind fought to understand what she was seeing. She knew what the results of Wizard's fire looked like. But there were no more wizards, except Zed and, she guessed, Richard. But this would not have been Zed's deed. Outside the walls, off to either side, headless corpses were heaped in huge frozen mounds. Heads stared out from less orderly piles of their own. Swords and shields and spears were discarded to separate heaps, looking like great, dead steel porcupines. This had been a mass execution, carried out at a number of stations at once to handle the numbers more efficiently. All were Galean soldiers. As she stared in numb shock at the splayed limbs draped over their fellows under them, Kaelin spoke softly to the three men behind her. The word you did not know to use to count this many is thousand. There are perhaps 5,000 dead men here. Gently, Prindon planted the butt end of his spear in the snow, giving it an uneasy twist. I did not know there was a word needed to count this many men. His fist twisted the spear again, and his voice lowered to a whisper. This will be a bad place when the warm weather comes. It is a bad